And today, after a rotten week for the office of New York governor, Albany is getting a clean slate with a couple of firsts. David Paterson will be the first black governor of the state, but he will be the first legally blind governor in the nation as well. On the op-ed pages of Friday's New York Times, Stephen Cusisto, who's been legally blind since birth, reflected on what that means for the blind community and on what special skills David Paterson will bring to his new job. And we want to hear from members of our audience who are blind or have impaired vision. What does the swearing-in of David Paterson mean to you? Tell us your story. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org. And you can comment on our blog. It is at npr.org/blogofthenation. And you'll also find a link to Stephen Cusisto's op-ed there. Stephen Cusisto teaches creative nonfiction writing and disability studies at the University of Iowa, and he's author most recently of Eavesdropping, a memoir of blindness and listening. He joins us from the studios of member station WSUI in Iowa City. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Lynn. Thank you for having me.
Now, in this op-ed, you say that the governor's blindness will probably be less understood than his race. Why? What did you mean by that?
I think blindness is a low-incidence disability. It's what disability studies scholars call a low-incidence disability. That means that there aren't that many blind people in the United States as, say, compared to other disabled groups that might have larger numbers of people in them. So, you know, it's not necessarily the case that you're going to know a blind person. A lot of folks just haven't met one. So blindness remains a kind of mystery to the general population, not as much as perhaps it used to, but it still does. And so what I meant to suggest by that was that a number of people will say to themselves, gee, how could a blind person do such a job?
Yeah. And you point out, too, that blindness is often thought as a kind of absolute. Either you can see or you can't see anything at all. Whereas, in fact, as you explain it, there are many in-betweens. Is that right?
There are. And before I go any further, I might just say that there are three organizations in the United States that are involved with public advocacy and public education for and about blindness, and that I really like, and you can get to their links off of my own website. The National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore, Maryland, the American Council of the Blind in Washington, D.C., and the American Foundation for the Blind in New York, New York. All three of those organizations have copious online resources for people. You know, you can find all kinds of great information about blindness and low vision if folks are really interested in learning more about it. So I just wanted to get that plug in for three groups that I really like.
All right, then. What was interesting to me was when you were describing your own blindness, you compared it to that you said it was like seeing a Jackson Pollock painting. And I have to admit that my first thought was, well, how does he know what a Jackson Pollock painting looks like to be able to make that comparison? So maybe you can explain that.
Yeah. Many people who are legally blind have residual vision, and that may mean that they see around the edge of their, you know, the orbital sphere of the eye, or they see a small island of vision, you know, in the midst of, occluded areas. Some people who are legally blind can see if they put their nose right on a printed page or get very close to something or if a thing is magnified. So it's it's hard to know when you see that person with a white cane or a dog guide making their way down the street whether, in fact, they live in total darkness or if, in fact, they might have some partial vision. Now, there are a lot of things I really don't know what they look like. I count on my descriptive friends to give me a good sense of them. But I can see colors and fog and shifting shapes, threads of color, and that seems pretty commensurate with what I've been told a Jackson Pollock painting looks like.
And what about David Paterson? Do you know what form his blindness takes, or do you have any idea?
David Paterson had a childhood viral illness that left him blind in one eye and partially sighted in the other. Those kinds of conditions do happen even today. And he has a little bit of residual vision in one eye and none in the other.
What's interesting about your op-ed piece is you really point out that blind people have skills that I guess you would call them hidden skills, and specifically in the case of David Paterson taking over as governor of New York State, you really make the argument that some of these hidden skills will help him in a leadership role like that. Give me an example.
You know, there's an interesting book called The Art of Memory by Francis Yates, in which Professor Yates tells us that the ancient Romans could memorize whole speeches and deliver them on the floor of the Senate, that they had greater powers of memory, you know, than contemporary people do. And I think that blind people who are successful in their professional lives tend to be able to carry large amounts of information and compartmentalize it and call upon it with remarkable dexterity. And today, if any of your listeners saw Governor Paterson deliver his first speech on the floor of the legislature in Albany, he was remarkably cogent, supple, and systematic in his delivery, and finally, quite inspiring. And you could see that he was calling up much of what he had to say from a capacious memory.
All right. We are talking with Stephen Cusisto about his opinion page article on called That Vision Thing. And we're going to take a call now from John. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 989-8255. Let's go to John in Tallahassee, Florida. Hi, John.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
I'm a blind attorney in Tallahassee, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in private practice in criminal defense for 18 years. I lost the last of my usable vision the first year in law school, where I learned Braille.
Hmm.
So I think it's a wonderful thing that we now have a blind governor, but I think there's still a lot of people out there that, like your guest was saying, that don't understand blindness.
Do you come across that a lot in your work? That people don't think you can do or don't know what you're capable of doing? Or
I have. I know my clients love me to death. I think that I still run into the problem of underestimating my ability from the people that I go up against, the prosecutors, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I still hear snide comments from some of the prosecutors, sarcasm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had one, you know, about a month ago where I went into court and a judge asked me to address him. I went up to his table. And he said, the comment was, "What's the matter, John? Can't you see me? I'm standing right here." And he thought that was hilarious.
So what did you say? What do you say to something like
that? I told him I didn't think he should give up his day job because I didn't think he'd ever make it as a comedian. You know, and the other people in the courtroom, I mean, there was actually a visual, a verbal, you know, that they couldn't believe that someone had said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're running into it. I mean, I'm the only blind attorney in all of the north of Florida that's in private practice.
Hmm.
And, you know, so I think it's good. I think it's the more we, blindness, as I think your guest said, is like the silent handicap, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it, you know? It's like people see me with a cane and, you know, can he see, can he not see, you know?
People don't know exactly what you're...
You know, and I don't see anything. I see, I have retinitis pigmentosa, so I have no peripheral vision, no night vision. I have total, I see gray, dark
right.
gray. That's
right.
all I see. But, you know, I make eye contact and I, you know, and I wear dark glasses so that the jury doesn't, you know, my eyes don't wander.
Right.
And you do the little tricks, you know.
Stephen Cusisto, you wanted to respond?
I was just going to say to John, first of all, hello, and I'm glad to hear about your legal work in the north of Florida. There are many accomplished blind attorneys here in the United States. One thing I often say to people who may, perhaps with humor, be, you know, ogling me as to, you know, what do I look like? I say, well, you look just like Cary Grant. I find in general that they are either very honest then and say, no, I don't, I'm not that good looking, or their vanity really comes out.
Yeah. And they say you're right.
You get a lot more with comedy than you get with it. I know I picked a jury this morning, and it's St. Patrick's Day, and the first comment I said to the jury this morning was, I wish them all a St. Patrick's Day, and I said it was so nice to see everybody wearing green on the jury.
Now, that's right.
And they
started, right.
They all laugh because, you know, it's like, can he see us? Can he not see us? He doesn't, you know.
All right, John, thanks so much for calling.
Thank
We're going to try and get some.
And love your program.
All right, thank you
Bye-bye.
So much. Appreciate your calling. We're going to try and go now to Ron, and Ron is in Sutton Bay, Michigan. Hi, Ron.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am excited to have a blind governor. Anything that can help educate the public on the capabilities of a blind person and let them know that we're just normal people that do things a little bit differently, but we can perform all the jobs is important. When I moved up to this area, which is northern Michigan, there were very few blind people. And even though I had a Bachelor of Science degree from the University of Michigan and a lot of experience in farming, nobody would hire me. I've been totally blind since I was three. And after a year, I finally got someone to try me as a dishwasher just because they couldn't get anybody else. So, you know, to have to work through that and go from place to place where people think you can't do any kind of a job was really depressing for a while.
Right.
And now I write children's books and go into schools and try to help educate kids that it's not that big a deal, that you need to look at a person for what they can do and not just automatically discount them because they can't see.
All right.
So it's going to be very helpful, I hope.
Great. Thanks for your call, Ron.
You bet. Thank you.
All right. And, you know, I was wondering, Stephen, you said something very interesting in your op-ed page. And let me just remind our listeners first that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And, Stephen, I was interested by something you said in your op-ed page that was very interesting to me. You said that for blind people, to just getting around, even in a small space, is like solving a puzzle, and that this is something that that really is very helpful in a job situation, in a leadership situation, because you develop certain skills, sort of problem-solving skills that way. I wonder if you could explain that.
Yes. I have a friend who's a blind graduate of Harvard Business School, and he says, you know, they're always talking in the employment universe about wanting people who think outside the box. He says, my whole day is spent outside the box. I live outside the box. Orientation and mobility skills that the blind possess, basically means that we're constantly thinking about the sounds in the ambient environment around us, making determinations about what those sounds mean. Making prudent choices about the flow of traffic and parallel traffic, and we're also retaining information about what we've already encountered in a architectural space, keeping careful track of information, keeping track of the flooring. I know, for instance, in many buildings that I'm often working in, just precisely when I've entered the area where the stairwells are, because the sound changes in that particular foyer. Hmm. And I know when I turn a particular corridor, how many doors it is down the way to where I want to get to. And, I mean, these things are, of course, it's a kind of
kind of trains mental... your mind, it sounds like you're saying. Your mind gets trained to sort of hold information and develop certain skills that the sighted person just takes for granted, I think you're saying.
Yeah, I would say that it's mm-hmm. It does the kind of thing that crossword puzzle solving uh-huh. will do for you. It toughens your mind up and keeps you alert.
All right, let's see. I want to see if we can get another call in here before we have to go. I believe the name is Twain, calling from Keene, New Hampshire. Is that right?
That's right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Steve. I was a student of yours when you were at Hobart College many years ago.
I remember you well.
All right. Well, I wanted to call when I heard your name because I remember being in your class, in your nonfiction writing class, and I've since worked with a couple of blind attorneys. So it was interesting to hear your caller earlier. And that is, I'm not blind, and I just wanted to ask you cues for the rest of us when working with blind colleagues, because there is often that awkward moment. What can he see? What can he see? What can I do? What can he do? or she, and what sort of feedback can you offer us?
My general rule of thumb is that you should let the blind person or the visually impaired person take the lead. If they're interested and need help from you, they will know how to ask for it. And otherwise, really, the truth of the matter is the chances are good that they're really, really good getting around and navigating and doing what they have to do on their own. And so that saves everyone from having to think about that dynamic.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call, Twain.
All right. Good luck, Steve.
And just
thanks, Twain.
Quickly, as a last question, I imagine the governor is going to need, even though he has these kinds of skills, will still need some assistive technologies. Is that right? And that there's been great progress in that area as well, I understand.
There are wonderful assistive technologies now available for the blind. These include screen reading software for the computer. They include portable digital devices, PDAs, for the blind, as well as new talking cell phones. The National Federation of the Blind that I mentioned earlier there in Baltimore has, in fact, pioneered with Nokia, the Finnish telephone company, to create a new generation of talking cell phone that can also photograph printed pages and objects and then narrate what it has seen to All use right. that photographic skill.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Stephen.
Thank you, Lynn.
Stephen Cosisto teaches creative nonfiction writing and disability studies at the University of Iowa. He's the author most recently of Eavesdropping, a memoir of blindness and listening, and he joined us from the studios of member station WSUI in Iowa City. This is Talk of the Nation. From NPR News, I'm Lynn Neary in Washington.